I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. Last year, when Jim Taylor was on the program to talk about his memoir, he mentioned that he was working on my guest now, Dale Richards' own memoir. Dale was one of the first guests on the program when we first started 5 years ago, and now he's back with his book. One More Time has just been published. It's a wonderful book filled with wonderful remembrances of his storied career as a musician here and across Canada on the radio and elsewhere. The book has some wonderful photographs and is also a wonderful view onto the city, Vancouver, taking us to those great places that once were, Izzy's, the Cave, the panorama roof at the Hotel Vancouver, and more. He was born in 1918, and he's been honored by nearly every institution in this country. He's has the Order of Canada, the Order of BC. He's got honorary degrees. He will be a torchbearer in the 2010 Winter Olympic Games. He plays regular gigs throughout the area, so check out his website, dalerichards.com, for dates. You can also hear his program, Dale's Place, Sundays on radio station AM 650. He maintains a calendar that would tire someone half his age, but at 91, it doesn't seem to faze him. This is such a great book, and you want to go out and get it. One More Time, the Dale Richards story, written by Mr. Richards with Jim Taylor. It's published by Harbor. Please welcome once again to the Plant on the Line program, Dale Richards. Good morning, Mr. Richards.
Good morning. That's a great introduction. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for joining us. I'm sure you're asked us a lot about what's the secret of staying so active at 91. I mean, I saw you walking up Richards about a couple weeks ago, and I mean, you just seem spry and the sort. Does it annoy you when people say that you look so good for your age, or that they're surprised at how active you are?
Well, it doesn't annoy me, of course, but I'm grateful that I'm doing what I'm doing. I think, to put it succinctly, my doctor, she's a woman, and I was into her office to see her a couple of months ago, and as I was leaving, she put her hand on my shoulder. She said, "Dale, don't stop blowing that horn. You may drop dead." I think that, you know, leading a band keeps you on your toes, both literally and figuratively. You have a dozen or more musicians in front of you, the best in the city, in my case, I hope, I think so. And you have to be aware of what you're doing. You have to be in control of what you're doing. And that's what I've fastened my life on. I try to make plans for everything ahead, so I'm not surprised. And I do physically exercise regularly. When you saw me walking up Richard Street, is probably an evidence of that. I have been asked to carry the Olympic flame. I don't know whether you know that or not.
Yeah, well, when is that? That's during the ceremony?
It's on February the 12th. The Olympic torch, I'm carrying it on the day, the ending of the torch run and the beginning of the Olympics. I don't know where, but other than the city of Vancouver. So I am in training for that, and I try to keep fit. I belong to fitness classes at the Roundhouse and go there twice a week. Thursday afternoon, I go to the YWCA. They have a great swimming pool there. The YMCA is not ready yet. And I swim to the 20 lengths, which is about an eighth of a mile, so I try and keep fit. And I have I live in a condominium on Beattie Street, and it's fashioned from an old warehouse, a 100-year-old warehouse, and it's on three levels with a curling stairway, steel staircase, and I'm up and down there, I don't know how many times a day, so that keeps me active. But I also, my wife, Muriel Honey, she's very conscious of being fit and active. And she, in fact, runs the Vancouver Sun Marathon. So we go out a couple of nights a week to Andy Livingston Park, which is nearby, a couple of evenings, about 5 o'clock, when 6 o'clock, when she finishes work. And she jogs with me, and I'm trying to be ready for that run, carrying the torch, and I think I am.
Yeah. Now, you write about your wife, Muriel, and you say in the book you have a way of introducing her because of her work at the film office.
Well, she he has a tough job because the film companies are always eager to do filming in, well, it could be anywhere. It could be downtown. It could be closure streets. It could be in the suburbs, and the film trucks and the filming and the cameras and the lights and so forth sometimes annoy the residents, and she has to be tough about it sometimes, but she tries to be delicate about it. She tries to be reasonable. I call her the bitch from City Hall. I don't know whether you've noticed in my book, I dedicated the book to, it says, for Muriel, who keeps me tap dancing.
Yeah, yeah. And do people still mention the age difference, or is that people past that now?
Oh, they're way past that. I haven't heard about it. I haven't thought about it. It's just a matter of fact that we're together. I don't think that's a question any longer.
Yeah. Do you have an iPod?
No.
No. And so how do you listen to music? Do you listen to it on CD, or do you have a record player?
Well, both, but I rarely use a record player, although if I want to find an old song, sometimes I resort to using that with an LP. But most of my music is on CD. And we have a new one, by the way. I don't know whether you know that or not.
Yeah, Dale Richards and Friends, is it?
That's it. Yeah. One More Time. Same title as the book.
Yeah. It must be fun still, playing around the city, playing at gigs and the sort. Is it?
Oh, absolutely. This book has brought a new factor to my attention. I go to these bookstores and elsewhere, and people line up to get a signature. They won't buy the book without a signature. So I always extend a greeting, but I found that every person, without exception, has a story to relate to me. They want to tell me where they first danced at Al Richards, or that they became engaged at the Panorama Ruth Hotel, Vancouver, or some sort of story. And I appreciate that. I enjoy hearing those stories. I like to think that I've been a factor in the love life of many people in the city.
Yeah, you have indeed, yeah. Does it surprise you that the music is still popular? I mean, Vera Lynn has, like, the number one record in Britain at the moment.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
We're about to play a Remembrance Day program next week, November the 11th, at the Act Theater in Maple Ridge. As we've done for several years, we have all the wartime songs that we play. And on my program, and you mentioned my air program on AM 650, I've already taped that, so that will be on this coming Sunday. And I relate to that. I have my guest is Bob Blackwood, and he brought to the show, which has been taped, as I just mentioned, the Vera Lynn songs, and I had the pleasure of accompanying her when I was musical director of the Telethon, the Variety Club Telethon, many years ago when she would come to Vancouver. And it just amazes me that number one on the charts in Great Britain, all those wartime songs. It's very gratifying to think that, because that's sort of the music I play.
Yeah. Now, you play the saxophone, of course. Do you play any other instruments?
No. Tenor sax, alto sax, and clarinet, all reed instruments. I started in clarinet with the Kitsilano Boys Band, led by Arthur Delamont, which is a very famous band of the, well, I started in the 30s, but 40s, 50s, right up to maybe the 70s or 80s. We won many contests, traveled a great deal, and it was a great educational beginning for me.
And when was it that you started at the P&E?
Pardon me?
When was it you started playing at the P&E?
Well, next year will be the 100th anniversary of the P&E, and will be my 70th consecutive year of playing on the grounds.
Wow.
In some manner or another, not always as it is now with a big band and singers. And I call my band the show band now because we don't play very many dances. There aren't many ballrooms. But so 70 years back, whatever date that is when I began. And I was in all sorts of organizations, a marching band, even the Oompa Pa band, and dust and lederhosen marching around the ground. So it's not always been a big band on the outdoor stage, on the global stage, as it is now. But I have been there in some manner or other for 70 consecutive years.
And it must be gratifying to see the different ages of people that come out and see you every year.
Good point. It certainly is. We have young people who have discovered the fun it is to be to swing dance and the music that goes with it, which is the swing tunes of the 30s, 40s, and 50s, of course. And that's kept us in business. And we're very busy. I've never been busier in the music business than I have in the last year, and going to be much busier in the coming year.
Yeah. Now, Lorraine McAllister, you were married to her. She was a singer.
Yeah.
She could have gone on to become, you know, a singing star elsewhere outside of the city. When the two of you were married, was there a desire for on either of your parts to leave Vancouver and make it somewhere else?
Well, not for me. It was for her, but not for me so much, because I wasn't a solo performer. My forte is as a band leader. And there were so many restrictions at the time I had opportunities. We had an opportunity to go to San Francisco and play in the St. Francis Hotel following a couple of weeks' engagement at a place called the Jensen Beach Ballroom in Portland. But to do that for any length of time and take a band with me was almost impossible with work, what they call the labor restrictions or obligations, and as well as the other factors that made it almost impossible to take a band down to the States for any length of time. You have to reside there for 6 months before you could work. Well, how many people could you offer that to, and they'd be willing to go through that process? But Lorraine, yes, she had opportunities, and she took some of them. When we were first married, no, it was before we were married, but she had come to Vancouver to reside from Montreal, where she worked with big bands there, Johnny Holmes particularly, and at the same time, Maiden Ferguson and Oscar Peterson were in the band. And she came to Vancouver because her parents moved here. Father was a druggist, and he came from the prairies to open a drugstore in Vancouver, so she followed. And she had an opportunity to go to Chicago and do work, and she did very well there for about a year, or perhaps less than 9 months or something. And she had her very opportunity to stay, but she felt that her roots were here, and we were engaged at the time, so she came back to be married. And then, while we were married, she did go to Toronto from time to time to do television work, but this was her home, so that was the extent of it.
Another singer that sang with your band was Michael Bublé. You gave Michael Bublé his first paying gig, did you?
Yes, I was an adjudicator for the talent contest at the P&E at the time, and he was in the talent contest. And when I heard him, I realized there was a voice there that could carry him a long way. So I offered opportunities for him to sing with the band at the P&E and subsequently at various other locations. In fact, another talent I encountered at an early age was Michael Kieshammer, the jazz pianist. I was an adjudicator in Victoria, I wasn't an adjudicator. I was an MC of what they call the Pianorama, which is part of the jazz festival, where the pianist came and played as a solo performer, as opposed to a member of the bands. But dozens of them in a church hall. Michael Kieshammer was on the list. He was last. I didn't know him, and he didn't know me, and I asked him when I found him in the hall, what can I say about you? I don't have a band association here. He says, no, I'm not. I'm just here as a soloist. I was born in Germany, and I discovered Oogie Woogie when I was studying classical piano, and here I am. So I introduced him. He played Tico Tico in a boogie-woogie fashion, and the audience was totally silent for about 5 seconds, and then the hall erupted. So following that, he came to Vancouver, and I asked him to perform with me at the P&E, and he went on from there. And incidentally, we are playing for the opening of the Paralympics show at BC Place on...
in March, right?
I think it's March the 12th. Yeah, March the 12th. And Michael is the featured performer as well.
Are people like Keys Hammer and Bubley, are they the future of where this music that you play is going?
That's a tough question about the future of the music, but it's here now, and to a large degree, as opposed to, say, 34 years ago, when it was fell by the wayside with the Beatles and Elvis and that sort of thing, who were the top of the charts. But now it's enjoying a resurrection.
Now, Jim Taylor, like you, he's been on the program before. He's just a marvelous storyteller and, of course, a superb writer. What did he bring to this project?
Well, we've been friends for a number of years, socially, and he would be in my home or I'd be in his. And he kept nagging me, "Dad, you've got to write a book. You've got a wealth of stories to tell. And if you don't tell them, they're gone. They'll be lost." So he finally persuaded me. And one of the reasons, people ask me, how come you became associated with a sports writer? Well, I know that he has a basement full of jazz. So with that knowledge of his background and his appreciation of music, that's why we joined forces to write the book.
He's such a good writer, too, isn't he?
No, oh, no question.
Yeah.
I've read several of his books before he joined with me in writing my story.
Yeah. In June, I interviewed Christopher Buckley, the son of William F. Buckley, and he's written a memoir about his parents. And he talked about their wedding here in Vancouver.
Did he?
Yeah. And he says that people are still talking about it. You're still talking about it. There's a photo in the book. You played at that wedding, right, at Shannon?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. What did you remember? What kind of songs you played that day? Because Buckley, when I talked to him, says that the songs that his mom liked were songs. You know, Gershwin's "Isn't It Romantic" and the sort. Do you play that?
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten about that. Yes, we did. Yeah, we played the wedding took place at Shannon, which was in her home. At 57 in Granville, the grounds are still there, the house is still there, they're condominiums on the grounds now. That was the most elegant and biggest wedding, I guess, in the history of Vancouver. I understand there were 1,500 guests there.
Yeah.
And, Vanity Fair recently carried an extensive story on the Buckleys, maybe you read that, after they died, and they died just months apart.
Yeah.
William F. Buckley, Bill Buckley, and Patricia. After the wedding, they went to Hawaii for a honeymoon. And after they came back, they came to the panorama roof of the Hotel Vancouver, just the two of them. And we renewed acquaintances, of course. And their request at that time was a Hawaiian wedding song, which we played for them.
In reading the book and from talking to you, I guess it was 5 years ago the last time you were on, it seems like this is where you're at now. This is the best time. Is it?
Yes, it is. There are a lot of factors contributing to that. The Olympics, we're going to be very busy during and before the Olympics. In fact, we're playing relative gigs now that are relative to the Olympics. And I'm enjoying my marriage tremendously to Muriel. She's a great help in my business now. You know, we talk about the music business. Well, that's just been an expression, but now it actually is a business. You can't move without having to have a contract to verify what you're going to do, where you're going to do, when, number of musicians. We have to file contracts with the musicians' union, with the musicians, and with the employer. There's a lot more business to the music business than there used to be.
Did you enjoy looking back at your life in this book?
Did I beg your pardon?
Did you enjoy looking back at your life while writing this book?
Yeah. Yes, I haven't been asked that question before, and I haven't thought about it too much, but now that you bring it up, yes, it brought back a lot of memories, because when I think of one episode or one event that I thought should be in the book, it reminded me of another, and all sorts of memories popped up that I had long since forgotten, and it was kind of fun to remember those memories and record them for, I hope, the pleasure of others.
And I think you've done a great service, because it's a wonderful, I guess, social history of the city that we don't get enough of. And I guess Jim Taylor was right getting this book together. Dal, it's been a pleasure talking to you again. If I ever see you on the street again, I'll say hello.
I hope I'll see you in front of the bandstand someday.
Oh, perhaps, yeah.
Please say hello.
I will, yeah. Continued good luck with the book. Do listen to the show Sunday evenings, AM 650, Dal's Place. The website, again, dalrichards.com. The book is called One More Time, The Dal Richards Story, written with Jim Taylor. It's author Dal Richards on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.